The next case is 04-253, Scott D. Shell, DVM versus Ohio Veterinary Medical Licensing Board. Mr. Carney.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Stephen Carney for Attorney General Petro and the State Veterinary Board. If I may, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This case involves straightforward statutory construction, and three key features of the statute here show that the Veterinary Board has the power to conduct surprise inspections without 5 days' notice when those inspections are part of a surprise broader investigation. The three features are, first, the statute says that inspections generally require 5 days' notice, except as provided in this division. So that except as language tells us, first, that there is an exception from the 5 day notice, and that we'll find it somewhere in Division A, no further than those borders. Second, the statute never mentions inspections again, but jumps right into talking about investigations, which leads to the logical conclusion that the inspections we're looking for are part of these broader investigations that expressly are allowed to be
so
without.
So inspections and investigations are interchangeable words? I mean, that's the foundation of your argument, isn't it?
Not entirely, Your Honor. I agree that investigations include inspections, but investigations can be broader. An investigation, you can call up witnesses, ask what happened, and then inspect. But every investigation worthy of the name will include an inspection as a component, probably the central component. Sometimes there might be nothing more than just the inspection, but there may be broader things than an investigation.
So is there ever an inspection without an investigation?
Yes, Your Honor. There are routine compliance inspections that are allowed in a separate section of the code. It talks about that everybody who has a veterinary license has to allow reasonable inspection of their records. So the board will constantly go around the state and just say, oh, we're going to go up to Cleveland and inspect all the veterinarians in Cuyahoga County over the next couple of days. Those inspections do require 5 days' notice. You know, is next Tuesday good for you? Sure, we'll be there. But if you have an investigation where there's a report of wrongdoing, that's when the assembly says, well, if there's a report of wrongdoing, you might want to just go straight up there and not give, you know, the heads up to...
But doesn't that report of wrongdoing have to be in writing?
It does, Your Honor, but it does not have to necessarily be from an outside complainant. It talks about an investigator or source of knowledge. So if the investigator hears something and then the investigator reports in writing to the board,
Was that done in this case?
I believe so, Your Honor. Everything was done. There was an express authorization for the investigation. The investigator here had received the word from two pharmaceutical companies, I believe it was Upjohn and Pharmacia, about the use of steroids here. And so the investigator reported that to the board. The board authorized an investigation, and he went on and investigated without
counsel. There was not a finding of abuse, though, for the use of the steroids.
That's correct,
Your Honor. And incidental then to the steroid investigation or use of the steroid medication, they came across these forms that didn't comply, the forms that were used at the various stables or racetracks to treat all of these horses. And that wasn't the focus of their investigation. That was just an ancillary or collateral piece of information they picked up that had really... by accident.
Right. Well, that's true, Your Honor, but it's not fully by accident in the sense that one of the ways you investigate when you get on site is to not only inspect, you know, the stable's physical conditions, but also to inspect the records. And that shows why this record-keeping provision is so important. If they had kept better records here, this whole problem might have been avoided, and there wouldn't have been a suspicion of wrongdoing if the records clearly showed which animal, name and address of owner, what the diagnosis was, why these steroids were being used. And
But wait a minute, let's back up. Didn't you say that what triggered this was the notice that he was buying or receiving an abundance of the steroid?
Yes, but there's nothing that restricts. Once an inspection is allowed and you go to inspect for what you're looking for, if while you're there you notice other violations, there's nothing wrong with noticing those. And in particular, when it comes to records, the Common Pleas Court even found as an alternate holding that perhaps they could have looked at these records even without this particular investigation, and that there might not be a causal connection. So while we think the court should be reversed, even if you were to affirm the 11th District, there was an issue left for remand about whether the records violation was truly connected by this investigation. But since that alternate ground's not before us, I'd like to focus on why they were authorized to go up there. They were doing an investigation, and there's another provision that further buttresses our case here, where it talks about when you're doing an investigation without notice, and everyone agrees you can do an investigation without notice, it says you have to show the licensee, or the target of the investigation, a copy of the board's authorization. That assumes you're going to have face-to-face contact. If you were doing what our opponents suggest of doing some investigation of everything but the premises, where you just do the phone calls and wait till day 5 or 6 to actually get there, you'd have no need to say, when you get there, here's a copy of my authorization to be here. That presumes face-to-face contact. I also note the statute was written in 1958, so they didn't think you'd fax it in ahead of time or anything like that. They presume you're going to show up and say, I'm here to investigate.
Much like serving a warrant.
Exactly. It's almost like a civil sort of warrant. And in fact, the board separately does have subpoena power, other things that we typically include with civil investigatory power and licensing boards.
But Counsel, could I back you up to your statement that the trial court, was it trial court or the Court of Appeals, found that even if there hadn't been this investigation, they could have done the inspection?
Well, the Common Pleas Court said that it was an alternate ground that this compliance, that if it had been a routine compliance inspection, which you can do on records any time, that you know you might have still, when you got around to looking there, found that the records were not kept in good order. And the appeals court specifically noted.
Wouldn't you have to have the 5-day notice then?
That issue wasn't fully fleshed out, so I think we'd have to remand.
It seems to me like you're. I mean, you argue that that's our fallback position, but what happens to 5-day if there's no investigation?
Well, I'm not urging that this court reach it as a fallback. I'm urging that the court, you know, reverse and find that this was an authorized investigation without notice that could include an inspection.
But you're saying if we affirm...
Then it should be remanded rather than this court going into it. You should remand, as the 11th District noted in paragraphs 31 and 32 of its opinion. They even thought they shouldn't reach it, but that they should send it back to the Common Pleas Court to figure out more of what was going on there. So I urge the court to remand if for some reason it were to affirm on the issue that's actually presented. But of course, we ask to reverse. I'd also like to stress that this is not a case where we're arguing for a broad scope of this surprise power and they're arguing for a narrow scope. They're saying that this exception amounts to zero. And so while they say we're reading words into the statute, we say no, just look in a dictionary. Investigation includes inspection. Everything points towards that. But what they haven't found an explanation for is what does this except as provided in this division mean? If it turns out that every single inspection, no matter what, part of an investigation or not, if every inspection gets a 5-day notice, that means that the General Assembly wrote, you know, except as provided below or except as provided in this division, and then never really provided any exception.
Well, no,
at all.
That wouldn't be the first time that might have happened.
I haven't found anything from this court that said an except as provided never finished the job. I think you could probably find examples of statutes that could be better worded, but I've never found a statute that uses the express word except as provided below or except as provided in this division or in this section. We looked the word except. We haven't found any, and our opponents haven't pointed to any of the cases where this court has said, well, the General Assembly wrote, you know, film at 11, more news to follow, and then just never got around to fulfilling that promise.
Well, but that's one of their arguments. Isn't it? One of their persuasive arguments, seems to me, that although the General Assembly put that language in, almost boilerplate language, there's no express exception provided for an inspection.
But to believe that, Your Honor, first you have to say that those words were put in case we come up with one someday, and that for now they mean literally nothing, which it goes against one of the canons of constructions, that every word in the statute is presumed to be there for a reason, not just as a placeholder for something we might do in another decade. Second, you'd have to find that the word investigation does not include actually looking around at the place being investigated, which
but
is,
they use the word inspection, investigation differently, but don't they? I mean, the fact that the General Assembly decided to use inspection and investigation, those two words, means there's a different meaning for them.
Well, I think the different meaning is, as I was saying earlier, that an investigation includes more than just an inspection. You call up witnesses, you can do other things, but they also talk about...
Why wouldn't we look then in the statute, since the General Assembly says except as provided in this division, usually there's an exception someplace.
Right. And if you look, though, in the paragraph that says the investigation, here's another interesting thing how these inspection and investigation provisions work together, is it says, in conducting any investigation for a suspected violation of the chapter, the board or its agent does not have to provide any prior written notice. If these are two totally unrelated provisions, we not only have an exception that never comes, but then we also have this express thing that says, when you're investigating, don't give written notice. Why would they need to specify that when there's nothing else saying an investigation of any type ever requires any notice? You could just say, go and investigate.
I guess you could argue that because General Assembly has written a discrete section or paragraph of the statute that seems to indicate that it believes that for an inspection, the person being inspected needs to have some notice. It's different than investigation.
Again, but the exception.
It's not very well written, I have to say.
I think we probably could all agree there are ways to clarify writing it if we were writing it today and not in 1958, but I think the express provision that we're going to hear from an exception soon, and then all of a sudden saying anytime you do an investigation that's responding to a report of wrongdoing, you don't have to give notice, obviously has to marry up with that, or both otherwise each is left without a dance partner here. You've got this thing that says, don't worry, you don't have to give notice when you're investigating. Well, why would you think you would have to give notice for investigating? Because there's no other notice provision anywhere in the chapter, let alone in this section or in this division. So not only does the
first
one say—
Well, counsel, let me ask you, would the veterinarian be entitled to a different response to the personnel from the board based on the presentation of a five-day notice or the lack of a five-day notice? When the investigators come to the site and have given a five-day notice, they are allowed, by virtue of the rules of veterinarian licensing, to enter the premises and search the records and the premises and the cabinets and drug records, et cetera, et cetera. And the veterinarian is not in the position to say, don't enter. Is that correct?
Correct. One of the specific provisions of what's considered a disciplinary act is refusal to allow access during normal business hours.
And that provision would apply then to an inspection incident to an investigation as well, the preclusion from barring the inspectors, or the investigators.
Right. If they tried to bar the door, that would be a violation.
Okay.
An independent violation. I also want to briefly respond to the alternate grounds for affirmance raised regarding the due process. Their attack here is not really a procedural one, but a pure substantive one. Basically, they didn't like the rule that says treat all the companion animals one way, individualized animals, and treat herd animals another way. They're saying that, well, in mass conditions at a racetrack, we should be more like a herd animal. That's a great policy argument to take to the board or to take to the legislature, but if you look at the plain language of the then rule, letter U, it talks about where animals treated as individuals. I think everyone would agree these animals, every single one had a name. Certainly at a racetrack, every horse is an individual. It's not just a herd where you say, you know, like, I have 100 head of hog, I have, you know, 100 horses, I have 30 black ones, you know, 40 white ones, and 30 pintos, and I don't really individualize them. Of course, every horse is treated as an individual animal. They had to follow the individual animal rule, and the substantive due process attack on that, saying it's not reasonable for the assembly or for the board in adopting this rule to want to do that. certainly doesn't clear the test they have to meet.
Mr. Carney, what is the rule you want us to write in this case? It seems as though in response to the Chief Justice's question, you said the exception is there. Do you want us to write it, or do you want the legislature? Shouldn't the legislature be doing that?
We believe what the legislature has written already provides an exception, and we believe that
What is the rule of law, then, that you would like to see come from this case?
We suggest the proposition of law, as we stated it in the brief, that when the board conducts an investigation under 474126A, for which no advance notice is required, and we all agree on that part, you can do an investigation with no advance notice, that the board may also include an inspection as a component of that investigation without triggering the five-day notice.
Then doesn't a rule of law like that pretty much indicate that there's never going to be a five-day notice given because the board can conduct these and then everything just becomes no notice? It's just part of a continuing, ongoing investigation without notice?
No, Your Honor, because an investigation can only be triggered by some indication of wrongdoing that the board has to adopt authorized or written authorization. So anytime you're doing a routine compliance of, hey, we're going to just check out all the veterinarians here, the five-day notice would still apply. However, if you're investigating, hey, we heard something's going on here, we have a report, then I agree with you, no investigation ever requires a notice as to the inspection component or the non-inspection component.
But you really don't find that language and that rule that you want us to write contained within the confines of that statute, do you?
Well, I do, Your Honor, and
you see
as
there,
he's put
right
in the brief, and I see I'm almost out of time, so I'll try to salvage my remaining seconds for a rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carney. Mr. Juris.
May it please the Court. My name is Edward Juris, and I represent appellees Dr. Scott Schell and Douglas Peroff in this appeal. Dr. Schell and Peroff ask that this court affirm the decision of the Court of Appeals for Geauga County. The decision below should be affirmed because the Court of Appeals correctly held that the language of RC 4741.26 is clear and unambiguous, and therefore a court must apply that language and not look beyond it to add language desired by the Veterinary Board.
Counsel, let me take you through your facts to see how your argument applies. You have a complaint or an allegation by some drug companies that there seems to be a large amount of steroids going to these doctors, correct?
No. What happened here, and I'm glad you brought this up, what happened was that the board's investigator looked at purchases that were reports of purchases that Upjohn supplied, and there was a spike in the purchases. The spike, as it turned out, was because the drug company was offering a two-for-one deal.
Okay, but there's something that triggers the desire for an investigation, correct?
Correct.
And you don't disagree that they don't have to have notice for an investigation, correct?
For an investigation, for an inspection, they do.
Right. I'm talking investigation. And your defense to that investigation, to that spike, to that abnormal rise, or whatever they think is happening with steroids, is we properly administered them to these horses, and here are our records to prove that.
Well, I'm not sure that the records reflected that. The records were kind of separate. They explained that they bought the steroids because there was a deal going on the steroids. I don't think that that's why these are really separate issues.
Okay, so you don't think they needed to have any records to prove their case, that their testimony alone that we bought these extra steroids is enough to get them a defense?
Well, right. I think what they're saying is that while we looked at these records, hey, guess what? The records don't comply with these arcane Byzantine rules.
Okay, let's change the facts a little bit. You get an allegation or complaint that their records are amiss. That's your complaint.
Okay.
Under your analysis, you have to have a five-day notice to inspect those records. So if the wrongdoing is concerning the records, you say they have no power to investigate.
No, they have power to investigate, but they have to give a 5 days notice of an inspection first.
So you're saying that if you look at records, that's an inspection. Doesn't matter whether there's wrongdoing alleged or not. You have to have 5 day notice.
Right.
So the surprise element, the ability to clean up the records, to change them, whatever, is gone under your theory because you have to have 5 days.
No, because I think that's a red herring.
No, that's not my question. You have the ability to do something to those records in 5 days if you don't have an inspection without notice, correct? A person, generally speaking, will have
generally
that
power. Generally speaking. Okay. But I would point out that you would have that power. If you get a notice of inspection per the rules and your records are amiss, as you suggest, you would still, under the scheme that they say exists, you would still have an opportunity to change those.
Well, but under your theory, if any inspection, if any investigation involves the records, no matter what the allegation is or the wrongdoing alleged is, you have to have 5-day notice if you're going to look at the records.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
I just want to be sure I understand what your parameters are.
That is true.
So, Counsel, is the reason for that the fact that there was no written complaint concerning the records?
Well, there was no written complaint. This was simply an investigator looking at these records saying, gee, there's a spike in the purchases
and
of steroids.
It just was, the records were part of the steroid investigation.
Well, right, and that's what's so frustrating. That's part of our second argument, which is they come in and they accuse these doctors of all kinds of malfeasance about steroid use. They're completely wrong about it. And to protect themselves against an attorney's fees assessment against them, they throw in this extra claim, oh, your records are out of whack here. Well, the records had nothing to do with the steroids. The records, and what they were trying to do is to say, we always got you. Whenever we bring a complaint, any investigation, we will always protect ourselves against an assessment of attorney's fees because we will always have these Byzantine rules that nobody complies with and nobody can comply with. As the experts in the case said, these records met the standard or exceeded the standard for this type of an animal. And they've changed those records subsequently. They've changed those rules subsequently.
But your basic bottom line that you want us to hold is that you can never look at the records as part of an investigation unless you give them the 5 days.
Right. And the reason I do that is that this court has stated again and again that we are not going to read things into the statute, which is what they're asking the court to do. They're saying, as the Court of Appeals said, you say except as otherwise provided, any inspection requires 5 days. And then they go on and talk about investigations. They don't revisit the word inspection. Now, the Court of Appeals says
Counsel, let me just stop you right there and ask a question. Is there any circumstance where you say a surprise inspection is appropriate without a 5-day notice?
Not under this statutory scheme. They did not provide for that in this scheme. Now, what I would suggest to you is that this element of surprise is not completely lost because you give the notice. The doctor doesn't know that he's under investigation. He may get a notice saying, we will be coming in 5 days to inspect your records. That does not necessarily signal an investigation because, as they suggested, these happen all the time. They're always having routine compliance inspections, as they refer to them. So they could give that 5-day notice. The doctor is not
a generic notice that doesn't give him notice of anything except the presence of the board inspectors on site.
Exactly. And then when the 5 days it passes, then they can look at the records under the statutory scheme, and then they can conduct the investigation and talk to people. There are other elements to investigation besides the inspection. I think they're saying is that every investigation has to include an inspection. It does not. You can interview people. You can look at the horses. You can talk to the doctors. There are a number of things that can be done besides inspecting the records.
Well, now, I think what they're saying is all investigations involve inspections, but not all inspections involve investigations.
They're saying that, but the legislature didn't say that. And that's our whole point, is that the legislature did not say that inspections conducted as part of an investigation do not require 5 days notice. Now, they say that the statute was written, all they need to do to change this is to put about five words, insert 5 words into this. When they say that investigation does not require 5 days notice, all they need to do is say an investigation or an inspection conducted in conjunction with an investigation does not require 5 days notice. All they need to do is go back to the legislature, add the 5 words that were omitted, and they've solved the problem. What they want to do is to ask this court to intervene and act as a super legislature and step in and correct language which was improperly drawn in the State House.
Or and we could conversely simply find that an investigation is broad enough to look at everything they need to look at. End of story. If they have to look at records, if they have to look at the horses, if they have to talk to people, an investigation investigates. Inspection is a routine 5-day, let's go in and take a look at records on a routine basis.
And the court
That's the crux of their argument. And well, it's an interpretation issue, not necessarily what the legislature wrote out. It's what the word means.
Well, but the Court of Appeals says that you have to give the language is plain meaning. The court
I can give plain meaning to investigate and allow somebody to look at records. I don't have any trouble going there.
Mm-hmm.
Very simple.
Well, but the Court of Appeals, as the Court of Appeals indicated, they're using two separate words here. They're using inspection and they're using investigation. So it seems clear that they're using them for different purposes.
Oh, I agree with that. They certainly are.
And
but you want to read out of investigation any ability to look at books.
What I'm suggesting is that you can do that if you give the 5 days notice. So
right.
I'm not precluding that.
You can't look at books unless you give 5 days.
Right.
You can talk to people, you can look at horses, you can look at the salt. Can't look at books, 5 days notice. That's your position.
You have to give the 5 days notice.
Neither of these words have been defined in the statute.
That's
Isn't
correct.
That part of the problem?
That's
I mean,
part of the problem.
If you're talking about the legislature correcting this, they could potentially correct through redefinitions of either one of these words. Is that right?
Right.
Right.
And the irony here is that when they went to these doctors and they said, we're going to hold your feet to the fire because you didn't dot every I and you didn't cross every T. But now they come before this court and say, well, don't make us dot every I and don't make the legislature cross every T. You step in and do the legislature's work for us. And that is, and again, that's where we depart, because we say that the principles of this court is that if the statute is clear and unambiguous, that this court does not add language to deal with a situation that the legislature did not deal with. And that's the situation here. In enacting this statute, the General Assembly said, we are going to give special protections against inspections to the veterinarians. We're going to protect them, and we're going to require 5 days' notice. They concede that the statute never says that there's an exception for inspections conducted as part of an investigation. What they say is that the Supreme Court should look beyond that text and that they should find that in the intent of the legislature. But as the Court of Appeals held, the clear and unambiguous statute is to be applied, not interpreted. And it can't change the words or supply words to meet the desires of the board, the veterinary board. And that's why the decision of the Court of Appeals should be affirmed. This court has repeatedly said that statutes clear in their terms have no need for interpretation. The courts have no legislative authority, and they should not make their office of expounding statutes a cloak for supplying something omitted in the statute. The question is not what did the General Assembly intend to enact, but what is the meaning of that which they did enact. And there is no authority to add to, enlarge, improve the provisions of a statute to take care of a situation not provided for. Here, the board concedes that an unambiguous statute is to be applied. They admit that. But what they're saying is that their interpretation is clear, that when they say investigation means includes inspection, that that's clear and unambiguous. Yet Dr. Schell and Dr. Peroff in the Court of Appeals, I think, have the better argument on this.
Counsel, this isn't part of what we have to determine, but I'm interested in knowing. Did these docs, they certainly kept track of when they gave trigger bute or a sedative or something like that, what was lacking in their records?
If you look at the brief, they have 16 parts, and some of those have multiple subparts. These doctors are going to racetracks, and
I understand the practice of veterinary medicine. I see in the briefs a discussion of the writing down the condition and sound like a chart in a hospital rather
right,
than
and a medical history of each horse and the name and address of each owner. And those records are kept separately, but what they're dealing with are the day sheets, which are the sheets that they take out to the field, and they're in the racetrack and they're dealing with 50 or 100 horses, and they're writing notations, and there's a code involved in there so that the doctor would understand. And if he was referring that horse to another doctor for further treatment, he would know what those records contain.
And they had that stuff.
Pardon me?
And they didn't have that stuff, or?
No, they did have that stuff. It was the records, as the experts said, were above the standard. They met the standard nationally, or they were above the standard. The problem was that Ohio's standard was so Byzantine and so overburdensome that nobody in practice could comply with
in
it.
In order to bill the owner, you've got to keep track of what you
right.
gave the horse.
Right.
I assume they did that.
I believe they did. I believe, and the doctor said, this is what I would have used, this is what doctors across the country would have used. The problem here came in because Ohio's statute, Ohio's administrative rule, which has subsequently been changed, was so burdensome that it was impractical. And as I indicated in the brief.
Well, Counselor, we can't really get into whether it was a good rule, a bad rule. It included too much, didn't include enough. That's not what we're supposed to be, you know, taking a look at here. The whole issue hinges on notice, not whether or not they complied with the 16 subparts of record keeping.
Well, that's our secondary argument. Our secondary argument is that nobody could comply with these in practice and that it was a violation of due process because they could not have complied with it. That's our second argument in the brief. Our first argument
is... So, in essence, you do want us to make a little legislation here?
Pardon me?
In essence, you do want us to make a little legislation here.
No, I want to find, I want you to find that this was a violation of due process to apply those kinds of rules to doctors in the field, because they're a violation of due process by being overburdensome and totally impossible to comply with.
And then subject our opinion and as opposed to their expertise from the board.
I think there's a huge difference between finding something to be a violation of due process and reading something into a statute. I think what they're asking you to do is to read something into a statute that's not there. And when we're talking about, I mean, these agencies, the only power that they have is the power that's granted by the legislature. In this statute, the legislature specifically restricted their power of inspection by saying you have to give 5 days' notice. They want this court to basically expand that power when the legislature did not specifically give them that power, and that's what we object to. We believe that the statute was clear and unambiguous. It stated what it stated. If it was flawed in execution, they should go back to the legislature and ask the legislature to change it,
Counsel,
not ask the court.
In reality, with respect to the specific findings here, if you prevail, the vet board could give your docs the 5-day notice, come back and look at the same records, right, and find the same violations, because they can't possibly recreate.
The rules changed by now, though.
Under which they were operating at the time these violations occurred, they would still be in violation, would they not?
At the time
they can't cure it,
well,
because they can't remember.
The question becomes then whether or not they complied with the inspection. That was a question that the Court of Appeals noted on remand, was whether or not the finding of violation was integral to the inspection of the records. And the Court of Appeals suggested that it probably was, but it remanded it to the trial court for that finding. So in conclusion, I would simply say that what this case is about is applying the statute as it was written, not as the court would have this court rewrite it. Because the Court of Appeals found it clear and unambiguous, the decision of the Court of Appeals should be affirmed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jurist. Mr. Carney, you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to just make two quick points in response to Justice Resnick's inquiry about the written authorization. The statute refers to written knowledge by any person, so that it can include the investigator. And the hearing examiner's report at page 9, paragraphs 20 and 21, indicates that Mr. Thompson received a list from the two pharmacy companies and that Mr. Thompson sent a memo to the board about those purchases recommending an investigation, and then the board did authorize that. Those were both exhibits introduced by respondents as exhibits 16 and 17 in the original record before the board. So the paperwork is there. Also, they failed to comply with the rules, even under the new rules, because what they were missing were the name and address of the owner in these day sheets and the frequency. They listed dosage, but not the frequency of the medication. So there are things that go to substantive practice here. Finally, in looking at plain language, any investigation, if you had nothing listed here, any investigation worthy of the name is going to include an inspection. There's nothing here about taking notes or taking pictures, but if you asked any investigator, how's the investigation coming? It's day 4. What have you done? Well, I haven't gotten out there yet. I think we'd all agree that any investigator in any field would think that an inspection is not just a part, but the central part of any investigation worthy of the name. Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.